Well, welcome.
I am happy to be with you. I am giving this presentation representing three authors and the Henry Street Consortium, and Mark Schaefer, who is one of the co-presenters and authors, is here in the audience also. One of the things that I think is of concern to both educators and people in practice is whether or not we are preparing students for 21st century public health nursing needs, and how do you best do that. And so I'm going to be talking about some of the challenges and then some of the unique solutions that we at the Henry Street Consortium have developed over the last few years. Conflict of interest, yes, one does exist. The three of us do get 3.33% of the profits after the first 2,000 copies are sold, and our first royalty check each of us got in September about $23. So we're getting very wealthy off of this process. Okay. I'm going to discuss content by objectives. There are four objectives in this presentation. And the first one is to kind of look at the challenges, which, as you know, are many. One is relates to the public health nursing workforce. Given the current situations in the United States, the need to reduce health care costs, the aging population, things like childhood obesity, we need to increase primary prevention. We need nurses in the community. And as you noticed, only one in 75 U.S. nurses is a public health nurse. That's one PHN for 7,756 people, and that's not enough. The issue of how to pay for the services is another issue I won't be dealing with. Okay. We're also concerned with educational preparation, and if you look in 2008, the initial educational preparation in nursing, only 34% was at the baccalaureate level and 45% was at the associate degree level, which means there's a lot of need to have continuing education during completion. About in 2010, about 50% of nurse graduates were prepared at the BSN level or above. So that's significant. But we still have a large associate degree population that needs to be brought up to speed. Well, why does education matter? What knowledge and competencies are required? We are all pretty familiar with the Quad Council competencies. But the ASHNE Baccalaureate Nursing Essentials has a laundry list, and they have a very nice document. This is just a laundry list of content, knowledge, and experiences that are required to be in baccalaureate nursing education programs so that our grads are prepared to go into public health nursing. And whether you're at the generic level, the degree completion, or the post-bac pre-licensure, this is a heavy load to carry to prepare students for that. We could also consider population diversity as far as whether we're prepared to work with an increasingly diverse American population. And you can see we still have quite a few disparities. There's only one population group that has more nurses than population groups. And, of course, for males, they're very underrepresented. How are we doing? Well, we are having some improvement in this area as far as enrollment in baccalaureate programs. However, someone pointed out to me the other day, it's not enrollment, it's whether they complete and pass boards that makes the difference. And we know that this is a significant problem for many of our students of color and students with English as a second language. So then, we've talked about population and students. What are the educational challenges? Some of these have already been mentioned. Lack of available clinical sites, the variability in the clinical sites. How do you prepare a curriculum and provide learning that is consistent across clinical sites? Faculty shortage. We know that many new faculty coming in to teach public health, community health, nursing do not have graduate preparation in that area or are brand new and aren't sure which end is up. I've taught for over 37 years, and I remember my first few years of teaching with absolute horror. So I know how hard it is at the beginning. Scarce resources at all levels, but particularly agencies. We know with funding cuts, there are fewer and fewer opportunities for our students to participate in formal agency experiences, and agencies are really stressed with having their nurses do what they need to do to serve population needs. Our increasing student population, especially with the growth of the degree completion and the post-bac pre-licensure. student differences, we do not have a heterogeneous student population overall. The variety of nursing programs and pathways makes it very difficult to have a standardized curriculum across the board, even in one university setting. And then the curriculum squeeze, I'm sure we're all familiar with this, where the content in nursing programs seems to be increasingly focused on acute care and with less and less time and energy given to the community health, public health content and experiences. And just to reflect on the diversity of experiences, as with many of us, my first few years in teaching the baccalaureate program, I did do my time in the hospital clinical before I got to move into public health. And so there are challenges in both, but the variety of clinical experiences, the need for public health faculty to establish their own clinicals, to maintain relationships with organizations, to place students in multiple sites, to try to be in many places at the same time. Many of us aren't able to directly supervise our students. It just provides a very formidable challenge. So, question, should we be content-driven in our teaching? We are all familiar with the 500,000-page textbooks. We know students don't read them, and I'm not sure that knowing a million facts makes for a good public health nurse. We do need to know some facts, but is that where our focus should be? Certainly in the last decade, we've moved to more process-oriented preparation, much more time spent in the lab, hopefully more time in clinical, narrative pedagogy, lots of different methodologies where we have more interaction with the student. Context-driven, getting the students out in the community where people live. One person who was not in nursing told me, well, you shouldn't take the students out, you should bring the clinical, bring the community into the classroom. And I looked at her with absolute horror. You know, we can do a little bit of that, but mostly we have to be out there with the people and the real life experiences. And then should we be competency-based, and that really reflects the difference between content and competency, what students should be able to do and know when they get out of the programs. And then objective two, describe the advantages of a competency-based approach. Given all of these challenges, the Henry Street Consortium, and I'll explain who we are in a minute, decided to go with a competency-based approach to developing some tools for educators and people in practice to use. We're responding to students' diverse learning needs. Mentioned the diversity, competing roles and responsibility. Many of our students work 20 to 40 hours a week, have children, grandparents, parents that they care for. We're looking, students looking for meaning. That really gets into the affective domain. Why should I care about this? What should I do? Committed scholars who really want to look at the statistics and the acute care and everything's in literature, and going out to a homeless shelter doesn't seem to be where they want to be. The disengaged learner, we have many of those, and a lot of that's related to their competing roles. They just want to do what they need to do to pass boards and get out. And the difficulty translating knowledge and theory into practice. Many of these teaching learning strategies we have included in our response, our own approach to solutions, and student-focused learning, focused meaningful learning experiences. How does this make a difference? I want to make a difference. Relevant real-time learning, going out in the community and dealing with what's happening right now. Evidence-based practice, which we've talked about a lot in different sessions. Fostering active learning and reflection. And clinical-based learning, where we assume or we make the assumption that most of the learning occurs with doing in the community, working with real people, and applying the knowledge that we've already been exposed to. Students need exposure to all three domains of learning in order to achieve the entry-level competence we want, particularly the affective domain if we want some transformative learning related to social justice and understanding of citizenship responsibilities. We really have to tweak all of those areas. We want to pique student interest, and we want to provide them with choices that are meaningful and useful to them. So all of these challenges, how did we deal with that? Thinking of the challenges to the educator, the challenges to our agency partners. We formed a consortium called the Henry Street Consortium. And this was in 2002, we received a grant from the Minnesota Department of Health. That was a grant from the USHHS. Our consultant actually was Lynn Olson Keller on this project. And we decided to work together academics and people in practice, form a consortium, and we said, well, what do our students really need? Let's really look at this. And this process was really strengthened by the fact that we were including people from many different universities and many different agencies, and we were talking to each other, and we were solving the problems together, and we're getting the expertise from both ends. And we've been working together since 2002. In 2010, we had already developed a group of competencies based on national standards, including Quad Council, and developed guidelines and clinical menus. And we said, but how do you teach all this? How do you know? And we're thinking in terms of all those clinical sites, the different programs, the new faculties that don't know which end is up sometimes. And I was there, so I understand that. And so we put together learning activities that are competency-based, process-oriented, and also contextual in nature. Okay, so that's our 11 competencies, and our manual that we developed is based on those 11 competencies, with the first chapter on foundations, second chapter on evidence-based practice interventions, and then 11 chapters that have to do with how do you achieve this competency. And we're having a lot of fun. We've been working together. You could not write a manual as a group. We had 18 contributing authors, plus our three major authors. And to work together and put this together in a year, we had to like each other and enjoy working together because it was very stressful. Okay. So we wrote our clinical manual, and I have some copies here if anybody wants to look at them at the end of the program. One thing I want to stress is we wanted a manual that would appeal to both our agency partners, our community partners, and the academics in the area. And so I wanted to stress some of the benefits and how this manual is already being used in agencies. And one, some are using it to help orient their new staff or for continuing education. Some preceptors are using it to as a teaching aid when they're working with students. Even if the universities aren't using it, the preceptor is. Providing the agencies staff with the opportunity to help the educators determine what students need to learn, okay? Bringing in their expertise, which is rich. When we started and when we looked at ourselves now, altogether we have over 1,000 years of experience. That's a lot to bring to the table. Probably more than 1,000, but at least 1,000, okay? We have a process-oriented approach, so we use the public health nursing process at all three levels of practice, which is infused in the competencies in the manual. We use the, not surprising, we use the public health intervention bill for Minnesota. We start where the students are at, and for example, in chapter 1, page 3, really early, we have a little case study of students talking to each other, concerned about their not wearing uniforms, and do all they have to do is listen? Can't they do something else? Because listening doesn't feel like nursing to them, and how are they going to do anything by listening? We try to facilitate linkages. All of the students have learned the nursing process. Many of them have already had clinicals in acute care. Well, how does the nursing process work in home visiting? You know, it's like going, well, I didn't do the nursing process. I just went out and listened. Okay, so really helping them to see that they're taking the nursing process, that is what they are doing. Building on their curiosity and their individual interests, thinking, doing, exploring in the community, and this is just an example of using the newspapers to look for health problems in the community and thinking about how they might respond. Looking at ethical issues, we encourage reflective practice because in order to internalize and to bring something new into your nursing role, you really have to do that reflection integration. And this is an example of a reflection exercise applying ethical principles about boundary issues. Again, with no uniform and out of your formal setting, a lot of boundary issues emerge and students need to know how to deal with those. We encourage synthesis, and not synthesis of facts, synthesis of concepts and principles. Okay, and so this is a list of our key points for social justice and human rights. It's contextually based. We have a lot of case studies, a lot of examples, all evidence-based, a lot of suggestions for learning activities that engage the students in the real work in the community. And I'm going to start teaching in an online program in the winter, and thinking in terms of having students all over the United States out doing their own clinical and me supervising them really from a distance, how they're going to do this. The manual is developed to work with all of these different types of curriculum. And then, so we want to facilitate their learning of the entry-level competencies. Okay, I love this little picture of the student who's so excited about her computer and the evidence on the computer. So our manual is evidence-based. We believe to be competency-based, you have to have evidence. We believe effective doing is based on knowing, which starts with curiosity. We want to make the students curious about what levels of evidence there are and what you can build on. It provides that scientific foundation. It facilitates the use of the nursing process. What am I going to use, when, why, how does it fit with this client? And it facilitates the translation of evidence into practice. And also, it provides the students with real evidence about how public health nursing makes a difference. The manual uses all levels of evidence. We use the Johns Hopkins model. And this is just an example. When I say all levels, we have examples in the manual. This is one from one of my students from probably about 10 years ago who had a leadership project in the school and was doing dental screening. And because of the data she collected, the principal took the information to the school board, and within about 3 years, every school that had a high level of children of poverty had a school-based dental clinic. One student, one project. Huge impact. The manual, as I said, uses the wheel. We have examples and activities at all three levels of practice, and we stress both independent and collaborative practice in the manual. So what are the benefits of competency-driven, evidence-based public health nursing education? It's a mouthful. We believe it helps to ensure that all competencies are addressed prior to graduation. When you use a content-driven approach, it's, do they know all these facts? Okay, but are they prepared? We're not sure. Okay. We think it's a more relevant and an effective way of preparing students for entry into the public health nursing workforce, especially seeing as our competencies in our manual were developed in collaboration with people in practice, education and practice. It encourages practice evidence linkages, and it facilitates identifying and addressing gaps in the existing curriculum. So if we look at our competencies and we say, well, we don't have any learning activities or measures for a specific competency, that means we need to add something. If we look at a learning activity and say, well, how does that relate to the competencies? And we say, it doesn't, and it's an activity we love, we need to sunset it anyway. Okay? So, public health nursing in summary, clinical education, what are we doing? So thinking in terms of using the competency-based approach, a process approach, a content approach, a contextual approach, what are we doing? Are we encouraging thinking, processing, reflecting, linking, applying, critiquing, practicing, and passion? And I have to thank my colleague Carolyn Garcia for putting this list together. I think it was very, very insightful. That's really, we want our students to go from thinking to passion, right? Okay. And then given all of that, looking at our curriculum, okay, is it competency driven? Are we moving toward having them prepared for the competencies they will need to meet the health needs of the 21st century population and workforce needs? Is it evidence-based, and is it consistent with our national standards that have been accepted? Okay. And then, finally, are we preparing public health nursing leaders who will advocate for population health? Because we know that that's extremely important, that we may be able to do a lot of the tasks, but if our grads can't change the world to improve population health, then we have not achieved our mission. But that's kind of the presentation. Here are the primary references and contact information for the three of us. If anybody wishes to contact us in the future, and I'll be glad to answer questions, take questions later, and show people manuals if they're interested. Thank you.